Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick. On this month's show, I speak with Professor Harry Van Buren. He's on a two-year leave from the Anderson School of Management at UNM, teaching at the American University of Beirut in Lebanon. Van Buren came to New Mexico in 2003 and says now that his two children are in college, he and his wife Donna Ray, a senior lecturer in history and religious studies, were looking for a new adventure. He certainly got more than he bargained for. Lebanon continues to be gripped by constant protests seeking reform in the government. I spoke with Harry Van Buren by Skype on November 7th.
So the reason I came here for a two-year leave is I was here as a scholar in residence during my fall 2017 sabbatical and really just fell in love with the place, and the people and the things that American University of Beirut is doing, particularly in terms of scholarly engagement on issues related to social justice, environmental sustainability, and ultimately what it means for a university to be engaged in broader social problems. So we had been in New Mexico since 2003, and we really wanted some sort of change, some sort of change of perspective. I often have said to people that for every academic, you reach a point where you run out of ideas. And what I mean by that is not that literally you run out of ideas, but rather you have a base of experiences and a set of ideas, and you spend a significant portion of your career working them through. And at some point, you just run out of things you can say with that set of ideas and that set of experiences. So when I came here in the fall of 2017 during my sabbatical, I was really reinvigorated by being here. The questions that I do research on really relate to broad issues about the place of business in society and how businesses can act in ways that create a good and just and stable society. And being in Lebanon really exposed me to a variety of different perspectives on those broad topics. Just in being here since the middle of August, what I've realized is that there's a lot of complexity to those questions that you can only really understand when you leave a place like the United States and New Mexico and come to a place like Lebanon and Beirut, which, as I know we'll talk about, has a huge number of issues that I think have a lot of relevance, not just for a place like New Mexico, but indeed a lot of places around the world.
So what has happened since you arrived in August for the fall semester?
Well, the first 6 weeks were great. The weather is beautiful today. It's about 80 degrees outside. My office is a block away from the Mediterranean. The protests that have been going on for the past 3 weeks or so are often referred to as the WhatsApp protests. And WhatsApp is, in many places around the world, a vital communication tool. I, since I've gotten here, have found that I'm on WhatsApp probably a couple of times a day. Every committee that I'm on has its own WhatsApp group. It's how I work with colleagues. It's how I communicate and get things done. But also, WhatsApp is a way that the very poor in Lebanon communicate with their far-flung family members. There's an enormous Lebanese diaspora. And further, there are two competing cell phone companies, but they're both owned by the government, and they have some of the highest rates in the world. So this tax, which would have been a 20-cent per day tax on WhatsApp calls, would have amounted to about $72 a year that would have hit the very, very poorest people in Lebanon. So that was a precipitating factor, but this needs to be put into a much broader perspective. Lebanon is one of the most corrupt countries in the world. It's about 138th, according to Transparency International, in terms of overall levels of corruption. It's one of the most indebted countries in the world, so about 150% national debt to gross domestic product. You have extraordinarily high rates of poverty. You have extraordinarily high rates of child labor, so much so that child labor has increased two or three times over the last few years. And so while the WhatsApp protests were the precipitating factor, those really have to be understood in a broader context in a country in which you have a very, very small elite combined with enormously high levels of poverty and significant concerns about the economic and political stability of the country. And that's really what has fueled the protests over the last few weeks. The initial protests were about the WhatsApp tax. The current protests are really about trying to get a different political system, one that's a post-sectarian system rather than a system in which political power is divvied up on the basis of religion, and trying to get to a country in which there's diminished corruption and an environment in which young people are able to make a future for themselves in Lebanon, as opposed to having to move somewhere else.
Have classes resumed? I know they were canceled for a while.
So classes were suspended for a couple of weeks, and then we came back for a couple of days. But last week, we wound up in my program essentially canceling class for the entire week. And we made a decision that because of road blockages, we were concerned about students being safe, and so we've decided to cancel classes on campus. And what that's really required us to do as educators is to be really creative. So I have been recording lectures for my students, which I post online. I make my calendar available to students, so if students need to WhatsApp me, they can do that, and we can have meetings that sort of way. So everybody at the American University of Beirut is working really hard in the context of just an unprecedented revolution and an unprecedented set of protests to try to help students participate in those protests if that's what students want to do, while at the same time bearing in mind that students are here for an education and we're essentially trying to come up with ways to help students do both of those things and work with them to get through the end of the semester. That means, for example, the end of the semester closes on the 23rd, which means I'm going to be grading on Christmas Day and probably thereafter, because that's what it's what we've had to do in order to accommodate everything and get the right amount of time with our students.
So they can't necessarily come to campus right now, or it changes day to day, so but they can access what they need online.
Exactly. So even on days where it's difficult to get on campus, I'll give you an example. So today, there were protests right in front of the university, not protests against the university, but right in front of the university. And so there were road blockages all throughout Beirut, but also in the north and south of the country. We're not really a residential campus. Actually, we're an awful lot like UNM. We have a big student population, but students commute from home. And that means that most students weren't able to get in today. So as faculty members, we have to be creative to try to figure out on days, and it does change almost hour from hour and day to day, how do we deliver the material we need to deliver to students, have the contact with students that we need, and help students get through their programs while at the same time participating in what is a tremendous moment for the life of the country.
What is life like day to day there?
It's a really interesting question, because to the extent that anybody knows anything about Lebanon, they know about the civil war, or they know about the Israeli occupation, or a few other things. So Lebanon and Beirut don't exactly have the best image and reputation. And so when I told people that I was moving to Beirut for a couple of years, people were worried that I was going to be unsafe. I have to say, Beirut is far safer than Albuquerque on a day-to-day basis. So I could be out at 3 or 4 in the morning, say, if I'm not sleeping, and go to the Corniche, which is the boardwalk right along the Mediterranean, walk downtown and not feel a moment's dis-ease. So if you're not actively protesting, you're entirely fine. And if you are actively protesting, you're probably fine as well. There have been the occasional outbreaks of violence, but on the whole, life here is incredibly safe. But more to the point, life in Beirut is incredibly dynamic. This is just an amazing, amazing city to live in. In some sense, I'm a little bit worried that all these protests, and of course they bring up much broader issues, but they reinforce this negative perception of the ways that people think about Beirut and the ways they think about Lebanon. I would tell you or any of my other friends or colleagues to get on a plane and come here right now, and you would have just an amazing time.
Well, it used to be called sort of the Paris of the Middle East before the Civil War in the 70s.
You really see that because Lebanon was formerly a French colony. You can get astonishing French food, and there are parts of the city where if you close your eyes, you would swear that you were in Paris.
This is University Showcase on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with Professor Harry Van Buren, who is on a two-year leave from the Anderson School of Management at UNM. He's teaching at the American University of Beirut in Lebanon, which has been hit with large protests this fall against the government. He spoke with me by Skype on November 7th. One of the things he's teaching is employment ethics.
Employment ethics are really relevant to everything that's going on in Lebanon, and there are several reasons for that. The first is you do have issues related to child labor in the country, so that's a pretty significant issue. Child labor is actually growing, particularly among the Syrian and Palestinian refugee populations, and so that's obviously a really important issue related to employment ethics. But you also have a couple of other things that I think are really important. A lot of my students will talk about nepotism being a major problem, and that relates to the issue of corruption that we see very, very strongly in Lebanon, where students will talk all the time about it's not what you know, but who you know. And that's very, very much true. So that's a significant employment ethics issue. But this also appears under a broader set of issues related to the employment environment in Lebanon generally. Among people who are under the age of 35, the unemployment rate is 37%. So you can imagine for the people who do have jobs, they're really at risk of exploitation. You combine that with the fact that you have a lot of people working in the informal sector. So they don't have formal employment contracts. They're picking up things in the gig economy. They may be delivery people or engage in casual labor. And so those jobs, as we know from research, aren't terribly good jobs. Those are jobs that have low rates of pay, high likelihoods of exploitation. So in some sense, a lot of what's fueling the protest is the sense, particularly among young people, that even if they work hard and play by the rules and get a really good education, they're not going to be able to have the kind of living and the kind of career that they really want.
This is an amazing place for a business professor to be in.
I literally can't imagine a more interesting place to be for someone like me who does research on business and human rights. I'm starting doing some research on business responses to refugee crises. But other things like the relationship between businesses and governments, you just see things from a different perspective. I would say that even having been here for about 3 months, it's really changed my career forever in terms of the research questions that I'm thinking about, the perspective that I'm taking. And I would really recommend to any academic to go someplace else for a little while, and then you come back and you're refreshed and reinvigorated. And you're able to see the questions that you're interested in an entirely new way.
What I thought was also interesting, I was reading some articles in the BBC, is that there were huge wildfires in October, and people were frustrated because the government couldn't adequately deal with it. And there are a ton of environmental issues in the country that are also feeding this kind of discontent.
If you pick an environmental issue, it's almost certainly present in Beirut. So during the summer, there's an ongoing problem related to garbage in terms of not enough landfill space and ongoing debates about whether there should be an incinerator. So this summer, there was a significant stench over the entire city. And there's nothing like that to really concentrate people's minds about environmental issues. The water isn't safe to drink here. So people pay twice for a lot of things. They pay twice for water, so you pay a water bill, but because the water isn't safe to drink, you have to buy bottled water. We can also think about something like the fires in the Shouf Mountains. The Shouf Mountains are almost a spiritual home for people in Lebanon. The week before the WhatsApp tax, actually 2 or 3 days before the WhatsApp tax was announced, there was a forest fire in the Shouf Mountains. Now, what's interesting about this story is about 10 years ago, people in Lebanon had bought helicopters for the government. So these were not helicopters that the government had raised money for through taxes. These were private citizens that had raised money for helicopters, bought the helicopters, which were about $15 million, left behind some money for the maintenance of the helicopters, and the central government had continued to allocate money for the upkeep and maintenance of the helicopters. And when the helicopters were needed, they had not worked for 5 years. And so that really speaks to a couple of issues. It speaks to the competence of the government, but it also speaks to the climate of corruption, which is a major issue that people talk about in Lebanon all the time. When I was here in the fall of 2017, the Prime Minister Hariri, had resigned. It turns out that he was essentially kidnapped in Saudi Arabia, but that's an entirely different story. And I was with friends touring Tripoli in the northern part of the country. And we were in the souk, and this message came across my phone: Prime Minister Hariri resigns. And I look at it, and everybody looks at their phones and then goes back to lunch. And I found this a really puzzling reaction because, of course, if this happened in the United States, we would be talking about it all the time. And one of my friends and colleagues said, well, Harry, if the government did anything we cared about, we would care more if the prime minister resigns. And I think that's a really important part of the story here and why understanding what's happening in Lebanon is so important to understanding what's happening in other parts of the world. You have lots of places around the world that have a combination of corrupt and ineffective government, and those governments are simply not providing what people need. And when you have that state of affairs, you can't be terribly surprised when people start to protest in the streets, as we see here, but as we also see in places like Chile, in Hong Kong, and even in places like France, which happened over the summer.
And the prime minister, the same prime minister, has once again resigned. And so how are people reacting to it?
Well, he has already been named the caretaker prime minister, so he resigned. But he's actually in his job, and there's ongoing discussion about how the cabinet is going to be reshuffled in a way that will satisfy protesters. I don't think this is going to work terribly well because people on the street are not complaining about the wrong person being in a particular government portfolio. People are demanding what they're calling a technocratic government, and technocracy has gotten a bad name in a lot of places. But when people talk about a technocratic government, what they're really saying is we want people who know what they're doing, who are in positions of power, not because of religious connections or personal connections or family connections, but because they're good at a particular portfolio. That's what people are out on the street protesting, and what they're really hoping to get through these protests is a wholesale change in not just the structure of the Lebanese government, but ultimately the culture of government itself.
This is KUNM, and I'm Megan Kamrick with you on University Showcase. I'm talking with Professor Harry Van Buren from the UNM Anderson School of Management. He's on a 2-year leave teaching at the American University of Beirut in Lebanon. Since he arrived in August, there have been massive protests on the streets of Beirut calling for government reform. We spoke by Skype on November 7th. It's interesting that the protests are cutting across sectarian lines. Is that unusual?
That has pretty much never happened before in Lebanon, where you have particularly young people across sectarian lines who are protesting together. And it's ultimately because they're affected by the current state of sectarianism and the current level of corruption in exactly the same way. And what's giving people a lot of hope here is a sense that perhaps Lebanon is reaching an inflection point which would lead to the kind of government that people like my students really deserve, a government that acts on behalf of all people for the benefit of the common good in a way that ultimately helps build Lebanese society and the Lebanese economy and leads to shared prosperity.
There have been several stories about the nature of the protests. I don't know if it's still true, but a couple of weeks ago, I mean, it sounded almost like a party. It sounded like, to me, being on a street party in New Orleans, except that you're calling for massive social change.
So there have been some really, really amazing clips that have been broadcast. So a couple that I want to highlight: during one of the many, many roadblocks, which happened quite a bit during protests, there was a little kid that was trapped in the back seat, and the kid was getting scared. And so all the protesters started singing Baby Shark to the kid. I'm not exactly sure if that was comforting or not so comforting, but I thought that was just really emblematic of the spirit that people have during protests. But also in places like Tripoli. Now, Tripoli is in the north, and a lot of people think of Tripoli as a very conservative place, but you'd be hard-pressed to differentiate between the protests and an all-night rave in places like Tripoli. And I often say to people, you have not really partied until you've partied in Lebanon, because people here really do enjoy having a good time. And that has been, I think, central to the protests, because it's really been about bringing people together.
You noted as well on your Facebook page, just I think you showed, you know, someone who just gotten married, that just married sign on their car. Yeah. You seem to see a lot of resilience in people.
Lebanon is an astonishingly resilient country. In some sense, there is no way that this country should be standing at all, given the sheer number of issues it's faced, given occupation from Syria, given the civil war, where you still see pockmarked buildings with bullet holes to this day. So Lebanon as an ongoing country makes absolutely no sense at all, except through the resilience of the people in Lebanon. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of bad outcomes that could potentially occur. People are concerned about things like financial collapse, for example. They're concerned about the stability of the banking sector. As of this conversation, it's unclear where the protests are going and whether the government is going to be able to satisfy folks on the street. And yet, to the extent that there's any hope at all, and I think there is hope and cause for hope, it is because of the incredible resilience of the Lebanese people, combined with a real determination to try to make changes happen here and now.
I know some folks are worried that this could reignite the civil war. Is that a valid fear?
I don't think so. It's always possible that something like this could reignite a civil war, or at least ongoing skirmishes. But it's precisely the cross-religious nature of the movement that I think makes a civil war extraordinarily unlikely. In some sense, right now, we're at a stalemate where the government really isn't acting fast enough or deeply enough to satisfy the protesters, and the protesters have made it clear that they're not giving up. My hope is that the protesters continue their protests and continue pushing the government until they get the kinds of political and economic changes that they're seeking and that they really deserve.
You mentioned the banking sector. There were some stories about the difficulty in getting dollars.
And this actually gets to some of the structural imbalances that we see in the Lebanese economy. So Lebanon, in order to achieve currency stability, pegged the lira to the U.S. dollar. So my contract is in Lebanese lira, so I get paid a U.S. dollar equivalent, but it's paid in lira, and normally I would be able to exchange lira for dollars. That's not been possible for the past few weeks. And that's actually causing a lot of concern for people. So people like me, for example, who are from the United States and have bills to pay in U.S. dollars, if you can't exchange your lira for dollars, that obviously makes you significantly worse off. Now there are all sorts of workarounds. So when I come home, or go to England, I can use my bank card to withdraw local currency. And so at least because I've got the means to travel, I can get around some of these restrictions that I would be subject to if I were inside the country. But it does, I think, speak to people's real sense of unease. And at a place like American University of Beirut, which does truly draw a worldwide faculty, the longer that this goes on and the harder it is to translate and transfer lira into your preferred currency, that's obviously going to have a significant impact on the university and its ability to recruit.
given that, I'm just curious if you ever had a feeling or if people asked you once these protests broke out, you're facing difficulties like this, like, why didn't you just get on a plane and come back?
I can't imagine being anywhere else right now, to be perfectly honest with you. My research focuses on the intersection of business and society, and particularly the place of business in creating a good society. In a place like Lebanon, which has ineffective and corrupt government, business is going to have to play a very, very significant role in attending to the common good and making Lebanon a better place to be. I'm also interested in issues of economic equality and employment ethics. So pretty much all the research that I've been doing for the past 25 years now is informed in an entirely different sort of way by virtue of being here. So while there are struggles associated with changing lira into dollars and paying bills back home, for the time being, I just can't imagine being anywhere else, and particularly in an environment which is incredibly vibrant and incredibly safe. And yet literally every single day, there's something going on that's directly applicable to my research now and will be applicable to my research in 20 years.
So what's next for you? You're there for 2 years?
I have a two-year leave from the University of New Mexico. And so the plan is to come back and take everything that I've learned here and use it to think about higher education in a place like New Mexico, but to do so in a different sort of way. So to think, for example, about how what I've learned here at AUB, with its high level of engagement on problems related to the Lebanese economy and society, how do I take those ideas and then translate them to a place like New Mexico? In some sense, living in New Mexico prepared me pretty well to live in Lebanon. Both places have significant issues related to corruption. Both places have issues related to infrastructure, high levels of inequality. There's a lot that the university here is doing in Beirut that could be very, very useful for New Mexico. So my plan is to come back and to take what I've learned here and to apply it in new and interesting ways. But along the way, I've picked up some additional research questions. I'm working on a paper now on entrepreneurship and peace in conflict zones. So not post-conflict zones, but active conflict zones, because even when there's war going on, people are still doing business and people still need to have their needs met. That's a line of research that I would not have ever thought about before coming here. In a related vein, I'm doing some research on women in the Middle East and North Africa. I'm co-editing a special issue on that particular topic. So being here has just exposed me to all sorts of new research questions and collaborations in just a context that for the next 20 years is going to influence all the research and teaching that I do.
Well, that's great. Harry Van Buren, thanks for talking with us. It's really interesting to see what you come back here with.
Thank you very much for having me, Megan.
That was Professor Harry Van Buren with the Anderson School of Management at UNM. He is on a two-year leave teaching at the American University in Beirut. We spoke by Skype on November 7th. Since that time, the country's former finance minister has withdrawn his candidacy to be the next prime minister. Protesters forced parliament to postpone its first session in 2 months, and the country continues to slide further into economic crisis. Harry Van Buren told me this week that classes at American University are back on, but attendance is down. The political situation is unstable, he says, and there are increasing worries about an economic collapse. To find this interview and all our interviews on University Showcase, go to KUNM.org. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening to University Showcase.